first thing that should be clear is that there are many, many references in Chazal to spirits, demons, shevim, many, many references. And we'll mention a few here. Yeah, that would be great. Yeah. So we'll begin, we're going to run through some sources, just that we should just begin by realizing that the position that we need to argue, if we're going to argue against something, the position we would need to argue against is that we would need to explain all of the many references to Shadim, because Shadim, spirits, Mazikin is another term that they're used, that's used for them, appear all over the place. I brought a few examples, these are certainly not all of them. But I wanted to get a spectrum here of different types of different sources. So, for instance, the very famous Gemara in the beginning of Brachos, in the first source, Tanya Abba Ben Yamin Omer Il Molei Nisna Rishus La'ayin Liros. If one would just be able to see, we're not told what are we seeing. Ein Kol Birya Yichol Lamo Gidnei Amavikin. If you could only see, and Rashi tells us, what does it mean Liros? All of the Shadim that are owned in Lefana. If a person would only be able to see all of the spirits that are surrounding them, all of the shadim that are around them, so ein kol bir yichol lano namazikin, you wouldn't be able to contain yourself. You would be overcome with fear if you saw all of the spirits that were surrounding you. Another source. This is one of those sources that, you know, sometimes you go through the parsha, you look at Rashi, and you just sort of go right through it, and you don't realize sometimes what the source is actually saying. In Parshas Noach, there's some sources on the sheet, on the chair over there, guys, if you want. The pasuk tells us by Noach that Noach took in Mikol HaChai, Mikol Basar, Shnayim, Mikol. So Rashi asks, what's the extra phrase? Ubechol HaChai, Mikol Basar, Shnayim, Mikol. There's lots of redundancy here in the pasuk. So Rashi says, you know what Mikol HaChai is coming to include? That's the Shadim. Right? When you learn about, when you have a painting, his little kid in his bedroom of all the animals going into the ark, so you have the giraffe and you have the buffalo. You don't have the shade, usually, the spirit, evil spirit, being brought into the teva. But Rashi, it's a Rashi on Chumash, says that Noah also wanted to make sure he preserved some of the shade species when he was filling the ark full of animals. Another Mishnah, this is a Mishnah now in Pirkei Avos. Asara Devarim Nivru B'Erev Shabbos. There were 10 things that were created on Erev Shabbos. Go through the list. We have the earth that opens to swallow Korach. We have the donkey. All of the stars from Tanakh. And then we're told, Af HaMadzikin. Even the demons, even the Shadim, were created on Erev Shabbos. The Mazikin, and that's a term that comes up in many places. In fact, there's a perek in Maseches Gittin, Misha Achsu, and the Mishnah there is discussing someone who's overcome with different types of things that possess them. And there's a long discussion in the Gemara all about Ashmedai, who is the king of the Shadim, and all of his adventures in the world. So there is another source which speaks very openly about Shadim and about demons. Maseches Pesachim speaks a lot about Zugos, about not doing things in pairs, drinking two cups of wine. It's a discussion by Pesachim, because we drink two cups and two cups. You're not supposed to do things in pairs, because the spirits reside in areas where there are pairs, Zugos. So these are just a few examples. There are lots of cases. Gemara in Brachos says, don't go into an abandoned building outside of town, because that's where spirits hang out. So the question that we need to understand is, what exactly are these mazikin? What are these shadim? And you should know, if you type into Google demonology, so it's a whole field of study. Demons and our makoros are some of the prominent makoros. So is this just some archaic, backwards perspective of superstition from the ancient times? Or is there something else going on here? So let's first try to understand a little bit more about them. You might be surprised if I asked you, what's your familiarity with Shadim? So you might have known some of these Gemaras, and you might want to say, well, you know what, this is a creation of rabbinic literature. It doesn't appear in Tanakh, though. But the truth is, there are psukim that seemingly make explicit references to Shadim. Take a look in section Beis here on the Makoro sheet. Dvarim Lamed Beis Yud Zayin. Klal Yisrael here is being criticized. Yizbechu l'shedim lo elokah. Lo elokah. Elohim lo yida'um. They sacrifice to shedim that really don't have any power. They're not really gods. Elohim lo yida'um. Chadashim yikarevo. There's these new practices. And Klal Yisrael is being swept up with this behavior. Now, this is not a pasuk that proves that we believe in Shadim. It just proves that the Jews at the time were being drawn after Shadim, that there was a belief in Shadim. It doesn't prove that there are Shadim. Another pasuk is in Vayikra. We're told, V'zorak ha'chonis adam al-mizbech Hashem, discussing the avoda in the Beis HaMikdash. And then we're told, and because you have the avoda, lo yizbichu od es zivcheyem la-si'irim. You will no longer feel the need to sacrifice to si'irim. Now, Seirim are goats. Who's sacrificing? Maybe you sacrifice a goat. You don't sacrifice to a goat. What does that mean to sacrifice to a goat? So Rashi says, what does that mean? Seirim means Shadim. Now, why would the Torah refer to Seirim as Shadim? So the Ramban tells us that they're called Shadim, first of all, he tells us, because Shodeid. They hang out in desolate places, places that are not built up. That's why they're called Shadim. So why are they called Seirim? So we have a couple of suggestions of why they're Seirim. Rabbeinu Bechai, I put on the source sheet here in Gimel, says they're called Seirim because they're Mizdamim B'dmus Seirim. They look like goats. That's what these spirits look like. Ibn Ezra tells us, Nikru kein bavur sheyista'er haguf haroa osam. Like Miloshan Sa'ara, the Samach and the Shin. Are interchangeable. When a person sees them, he gets all worked up like a storm. It's an intense experience to see a shade. Sefer Hasidim was written by the Hasidei Ashkenaz. Lived in the 1200s. They were pietists in Germany who we actually have a lot of their practices that have crept into normative halacha that are not in Shulchan Aruch. Like, for instance, some people might be familiar with the practice not to marry that a man shouldn't marry a woman who has the same name as his mother. Now, that is not really a halacha. It doesn't appear in Shulchan Aruch anywhere. So where does that practice come from? It's from the ethical will of Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid. It comes from Sefer Hasidim and the writings of Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid. They were pietists, very, very pious people, and they had lots of practices that are not normative for our religious behavior. You know, when you hear about rolling around in the snow in order to achieve some type of atonement, this is with these groups of Sefer Hasidim. And they write here that the reason why they're called Seirim is because they're hairy. And they have a lot of hair on them. And that's why they're called Seirim, Miloshin Seir, from hair. But whatever the reason that they're called Seirim, we find he actually has a thing here about how Boaz, all of a sudden Boaz wakes up in the middle of the night, there's a woman lying by his legs, so he thinks it's a shade. He reaches out to see if she's hairy. He has a whole discussion about it, thinking that maybe she was really a shade. So whatever the reason is why they're called Seirim, or the Shadim are called Seirim, here we have another pasuk where the Torah tells us, I gave you karbanos, and now that you have karbanos, you don't need to sacrifice to those Seirim anymore. Again, not a proof that we believe that they exist, but showing us that at the times of Tanakh, the Jews were very taken with this idea of a shade, of a spirit. The Ramban actually says that's why the pasuk here is stressing Yizbechu l'shedim lo elo'ah, that they're not gods. These are not gods. You're right. Sacrificing to things that are fake. And that's why the Torah uses the lashon that they're zonim acharehem, that they are trading in, they're being adulterous in their relationship towards God, because they think that these seirim, these spirits, have powers. And that was certainly the draw after spirits, was the idea that perhaps I can tap into some type of power that there is in the universe or try to avoid certain forces that might be able to harm me. So what I've tried to do until now is to document that Shadim, a belief in Shadim, there's Sukkim that make reference to it. The Rishonim speak very openly about it, as you see here, and you would expect, if we were really didn't believe in them, that some of the Rishonim would say, well, that's what the pasuk's referring to, but we don't believe in such things. And the question is, well, do we believe in Shadim? Do we believe in spirits? So you start to see the crack in the glass with the Radak. If you take a look at Dalid, The Radak here is commenting on that pasuk from Vayikra, that Hashem gave us karbanos, and now we don't have to sacrifice to shave him.
If you read the Radak carefully, and I underlined it for you, so look what he says. The Seirim, they're shaving. Kimo Seirim Hashem Zonim Acharenim. And he quotes the other pasuk, like that reference in that pasuk. The Nikru Kain, the Fishen Nirim Kidmus Seirim. They're called this because they look like goats. Lemamim Bahem. To those who believe in them. Now, that, those two words there of the Radak is a gentle hint that, well, they're called Seirim because they look like Seirim for people who believe in them. And it sounds like the Radak is hinting to that he perhaps doesn't believe in them. Another place where the Radak returns to this, and it's the same Radak with David Kimchi, so the Radak writes in Tehillim, this is a pasuk that we might be familiar with from Shabbos Davening, Lo Seirim Ipachad Laila, Mechait Se'uf Yomam, you shouldn't be scared at night of an arrow that flies during the day. You know, don't be scared that you're going to walk and all of a sudden get hit by an arrow. Midever ba'ofel ya'aloch. Of a dever that walks in at night. Miketev, and a ketev, which is yotshud saharayim. What is this midever and this ketev? What do these words mean? I saw a very cute, I saw quoted somewhere recently that someone was speaking out about against Art Scroll. What do you need translations for? So one of the Gedolim said, well, he didn't say it about this pasuk. He said it about a similar pasuk. Well, when you know very well what a midever ofel yaloch and miketa yushat sarayim means, then you don't have to use an Art Scroll. But until then, and he was indicating that there are a lot of psukim in Tanakh that he's not so familiar with what they mean, and it's good to have an English translation in order to be familiar with psukim. So we say this all the time on Shabbos. What does this mean? Midever ofel yaloch. Miketev Yoshut Sarayim. So the Medrash says, Medrash Tehillim, Rabbanan Amri Shedhu. These are references to Shedim. And sure enough, Rashi picks up and says, Midever, Miketev, these are names of Shedim. Zemazik Belaila, Zemazik Betzarayim. These are two different types of Shedim. One is a night shade, and one is a day shade. And we're saying in Tehillim that if you have faith in God, you don't have to worry about these Shedim. Now, the pashas of the pasuk, by the way, is that it's referring to bandits and crooks and robbers. That's what the Rashbam says on the pasuk. But Rashi says that it's referring to spirits and to shadim. Here again, if your ears are sensitive, because we already know the Radak's position, listen to the Radak. Ubalei hadrash, that's the medrash, are mefarshim that it means devar hashadim. That pasuk also that we say in davening on Shabbos, that on the right of you will fall 1,000 and tens of thousands on your left. That's also referring to that earlier Gemara we saw, right? That if your eyes were open and you could see all the spirits around you, you'd be in a shock. So that's also a pasuk promising that, don't worry, Hashem will take care of you. All those things that are surrounding you will fall away. That's also al hashedim hu omer. But the chokmei mechkar, what does that mean? The educated, the scientists perhaps, they're ena modim bedavar hashedim umivat lemosam bemofes, and they reject them. What's a mofes? With but in context of science, it's used as a proof. As a mofes is a proof. Like when the Rambam talks about proofs of God, he talks about the when the medieval Rishonim speak about proving God, they use mofes. It's something that you can prove. So it's bimofes, it's a demonstration. They show that there's no such thing. Ki enum. So if you just had this Radak, you wouldn't know what side he's on. Is he just telling you, you know, is he speaking derogatorily about these scientists and saying, this is what we hold, and the scientists still think that they don't exist? But from the earlier Radak, it sounds more like the Radak is leaning in the direction that he takes issue with this idea of Shedim. As we saw last night, the Rosh HaMedabrim, perhaps the strongest voice, if we wanted to identify someone who is against Shedim, is the Rambam. However, the Rambam, as we'll see in a minute, the Rambam's argument needs to be built by omission and not by what the Rambam himself says. Let me develop the idea. We have a Mishnah here in Gittin. The Mishnah says, bottom of the source sheet, Mishaya Mushlach Labor, if there is a person down in a pit, the Omer, and he says, Kol HaShomeas Kolo Yichtov Gel Ishto,
and you hear a voice coming out of the pit and saying, I'm stuck down here, I'm going to die, I don't want my wife to perhaps become, that she needs to do a yibum, so write a get for my wife, I want to divorce my wife before I die. Because we know that if a husband passes away and they don't have any children, the woman has to be married to the brother, maybe the brother is on the other side of the world, it's complicated, she'll be stuck. So he wanted to give a get. The Gemara tells us that many of the soldiers in the army of David used to write a get to their wives before they went out to battle. Because if chas v'shalom something would happen to them in battle, or if they wouldn't come back, they didn't want their wives to be sitting there for years, unsure. So David HaMelech instituted in his army that every soldier had to give a get when his wife went off this discussion, if it was al-Tanai or if it was an actual get. So he's in a pit, and he screams out, anyone who hears this, my name is so-and-so, my wife's name is so-and-so, she lives in the following town, write her a get. The halacha is, yichtuvu, you write it. Now, that's a leniency. Normally, in order to accept something from someone, you have to see him, you have to have edim. But in this situation, he has to say, yichtuvu v'yitnu is the halacha. He has to say, write it and give it to her. But here we assume, because he's in a stressful situation, he's not being exact with his lashonos, with his language. And he says, write it. He means write it and give it. That's what the Mishnah says. So listen to what the Gemara asks. How can you just write a get because you hear a voice? The lecho shema sheidhu, maybe it's a spirit. He's trying to trick you. How do you know it's really the husband? Gemara says, Amar Rav Yehuda, kishiro lo demus adam. No, you see an image of a man. So you know, it doesn't look like a goat. It looks like a man. So you know it's not a shade. So then the Gemara says, ihunami edmu ye edmu. What do you mean? They have the ability to assume human form. So Gemara says, d'chaz le bevua. You see a shadow. So the Gemara says, okay, they can also have shadows. No, you see a shadow of a shadow, and we have a tradition from Rav Chanina that they don't have shadows of shadows. Now, I don't know what a shadow of shadow is, and I don't know how you would identify that, but that's not the point. The point is that the Gemara is being choshesh here, and this is not a, right? We could have said, oh, all those Gemaras you quoted until now, those are agadata Gemaras. Those are lore. Those are just stories. This is a halachic Gemara. The Gemara is raising a halachic objection. How can you write the get? Maybe it's a shade. Same sugya comes up in Yevamos. Here it's a little bit of a different case. Here we're trying to establish that a woman has passed away in order to allow her husband to remarry. So the Gemara says, normally we're very strict with Eidus, but we're going to be Makel. We don't mind. We're going to be lenient. We don't mind if someone testifies by a candle or by the light of the moon. They say, I'm able to identify the person based on the light of the moon, which is not the best vision always, and yet we're willing to accept the testimony. Because we try as much as we can to avoid a situation of a guna, and therefore a woman who's not able to get remarried, and therefore we'll accept the testimony. Even if we hear a bas kol, so we will accept that. That's what the Gemara says. And the Gemara tells us, the Mishnah tells us, there was once a person, Maisa be'echad, who was Amad al Rosh Ahar, he was standing on a mountain, and he screamed, Ish ploni ben ploni mi makom ploni meis. Someone announced that so-and-so has died. So they wanted to find this person, to accept his testimony in order to allow the wife to be remarried. And they searched high and low in the mountain. They couldn't find anyone. Even though there was a voice, they couldn't find anyone. And they said, it's okay, but you see what's ishto. And they allowed his wife to get remarried, even though they never found anyone. So the Gemara goes through the whole discussion again. Well, maybe it was a shade. The reason I'm repeating the Gemara for you is I just want you to see who the person speaking in this Gemara is. So they said, no, Amar li Yonasan Shida. Yonasan Shida told me that Shadim don't have a shadow of a shadow. So who is this Yonasan Shida who's giving us information about what Shadim have? They have a... So some of the Mefarshim say, he's a Shade. That's how they got information. How did they know that Shadim have a shadow and not a shadow of a shadow? So the Gemara says that it's from Yonasan Shadim. Now, as you would imagine, not all of the Rishonim accept Shadim, as we're seeing, we're going to see. So there are Rishonim who say, no, he wasn't a shade. He was a shade expert. They called him Jonathan the Shade because he was the shade expert in town, but he wasn't actually a shade. So just pointing it out, it's interesting that we have a person here in the Gemara of Yonasan Shadah. There's another Yosef Shadah that comes up in the Gemaras about Ashmedai. Now, why am I quoting these Gemaras? And I'll tell you one other Gemara outside, and then I'll take your question, and that's the Gemara in Megillah. The Gemara in Megillah tells us that if you're walking outside of the city and you see a person standing outside of the city, you should ignore him and keep walking. Don't strike up a conversation. because he might be a shade. That's the Gemara tells us in Megillah. It talks about with Yehoshua when he was outside of the city and he saw someone and it was an angel. Question?
Just a technical question.
Sure.
How did you know Rav? Shirol is a Masada. How do I know that that's important? He says, he quotes Yosef Shade. Wouldn't it make more sense to quote Rav Hanina?
You mean?
Hanina was the town.
Well, if you're trying to find out information about a shade, I would think
But Chanina is saying the same thing.
Right? Yeah. That's why the first Gemara quotes it from Rav Chanina. Okay, I can argue. I feel like you can argue both ways. That someone who's within the shade community might be a better source. Someone who's a Tana might be. I hear. What I'd like you to see is Tosos and Gittin. Tosos and Gittin takes these Gemaras seriously. And that's what I want you to see, because we're going to see in a second who doesn't mention these Gemaras. But we're not going to see who doesn't mention them, because it doesn't mention them. But I will tell you who doesn't mention these Gemaras. Tosfos in Gittin says, by the way, this chashash, this concern that maybe there's a shade, that's dafka bebur. That's only when there's something deep in a pit. Or when someone's standing up on a mountain. Or the Gemara that says, asur la'adam, to give shalom to chaveru, to greet someone, that's specifically in a field. Kol ki hai gavnam, now in the underlined part, in the second half of the second side of the sheet, the second source, kol ki hai gavnu chayishinan shema shedhu. Whenever in a situation like this, you're concerned that there's a shade. Aval bi'ir, mutter liten shalom. When you're in a city, though, you don't have to worry about it. You can say hello to anybody. I'm quoting the Tosfos, because you see Tosfos accepts these gemaras, l'halacha. This is a psak in Tosfos. He tells you, the Gemara is true. We don't greet people when you meet a stranger outside of the city because it might be a shade, but in the city you do. What's significant for our discussion is the Rambam. If you look at the Rambam in all of these locations, in his discussions of all these different halachos, the Rambam makes no reference to any of these Gemaras. The Rambam is completely silent when we speak. Whenever there's a Gemara about Shadim, the Rambam is silent. The question is, are we able to reject them after Chazal speak about them? I'll say just one cute, if it's true, it's not cute, it's unfortunate, but we don't really have a real source for it. But there's a sefer called Tamim Deim from Rav Moshe Taku. I believe the name of the sefer is Tamim Deim. Rav Moshe Taku. Rav Moshe Taku was quoted once by the Ramban in his Chidushim on Shas, so he's a reputable person. He's quoted Lahalacha by the Ramban. He wrote a sefer. He was from the community of the, I believe he was from the from Ashkenaz, and Rav Moshe Taku writes that the Ibn Ezra, now you have to realize that he's living 100 years after the Ibn Ezra, and that's why this question about this report. But he reports that when he visited England, he was told by people in England that the Ibn Ezra passed away in England. He was visiting there, and he was traveling outside of the city on his horse. And he all of a sudden was surrounded by black dogs that were looking at him. And he came back to the town, and he got sick and he passed away. And Ibn Ezra said it was because he rejected Shadim that the Shadim came after him. That's what's recorded in the Sefer of the Tamim Deim, of Rav Moshe Taku. So we have no way to confirm this story, and it's one source. And the source itself, the sefer itself, of Moshe Taku's sefer, is not printed. It's only in manuscript form. It's been found recently and been reprinted, and I believe we only have one manuscript of it, which always raises questions. I know that Rabbi Professor Saul Lieberman once found a manuscript that he brought to Rav Soloveitchik and said, look, I found this manuscript that says the halacha differently than the way we paskin. So what are we going to do about this manuscript? So it's recorded in the two-volume book about the Rav from Rabbi Rakefet, that the Rav patted him on the shoulder and said, you think our generation has a monopoly on Amoratzim? You found a manuscript written by an Amoretz, meaning you think we're the only ones who have ignoramuses? There were ignoramuses back then, and because you found something, you don't know if it was something good and put in the ground, or if it was garbage, and you found some garbage in the ground. So it's always hard to do something based on one source, based on one manuscript, but it's an interesting question. An interesting source. Now the question that I'm asking is, can the Rambam really reject Shadim? I think intuitively, we all say Shadim, whatever, that was, it was old and archaic and it's superstitious. But if we think about it, a shade is really the flip side of an angel, of a malach. When it comes to a malach, we're all very happy that they're malachim, and we sing Shalom Aleichem, and we're happy, and we tell our children about malachim. But when it comes to a shade, all of a sudden we say, oh, shadim, that was, you know, Rambam doesn't believe in shadim, so it's okay, we can do without shadim. So we have to figure out, first of all, what is an angel, and then we could perhaps begin to understand what a shade is. We have to realize that an angel, we are very, we live I was brought up, I don't live anymore, but we are right now in an amazing country, and it's a beautiful country, and there's so many great things that we gain from being part of this great culture. But one of the things that we have, that has affected us by being brought up in a Christian culture, is our perspective on what an angel is. We think of the snow, and we hear the music in the malls with all the Christmas sales, and we imagine an angel as, from the nativity scene on the people's front lawns with the wings and the stories with the halos over their heads. And that's our image, or from going to the Metropolitan Museum of Art, that's how we get our image of what an angel is. And if we would talk about an angel as a, with pixie dust flying around, giving people blessings, so that is a foreign concept to us as Jews. If we talk about an angel as a force in the world, that God uses in order to bring goodness to the world, that he has his channels and he has his methods and his forces in order to give blessing and to give peace and to give happiness. And if we call an angel a force, so it's a little bit of a different perspective than thinking of winged creatures flying around, with wands and the image that we have of angels. So I want to bring that up just as something that we think about whenever we're thinking about shadim as evil forces. You know, calling it an evil spirit or even demons is different than calling it an evil force. And something we also have to realize is that everything that Hashem created, whether it's an angel, whether if it's a demon, everything, the angels, even the Satan, wakes up every morning, he says Shira to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, says Shira, he praises God, he goes out and does his job, and then he comes back. We don't believe in a evil angel who broke away and is of the force of evil that is fighting against God. All of the angels, whether they're good, whether they're bad, and if we call them forces, are all part of a system that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created that sings Shira to HaKadosh Baruch Hu every morning. But back to the Rambam. So the Rambam doesn't quote any of these discussions about Shadim. The Sho'ul U'Meshiv, one of the great poskim from the 1700s, early 1800s, so contemporary of the Ketzos and Rabbi Kiva Eger. So the Sho'ul U'Meshiv writes in the Tshuva that the reason why the Rambam doesn't quote these Gemaras is because he says the Rambam didn't believe in Shadim. That's what the Sho'ul U'Meshiv says. He says the reason why the Rambam doesn't speak about it explicitly is out of a respect for the tradition and the fact that it appears in the Gemara, but he says that the Rambam doesn't believe in Shadim. There's also a famous comment, it's not specifically about Shadim, but there's a famous comment of the Gra, where the Gra writes in Shulchan Aruch, when the Rambam has an opinion that's different than some of the other opinions, the Gra writes that the Rambam was affected by the philosophy that he studied, by the Aristotelian philosophy that he studied, and because of that he rejected things that are really part of our tradition. What's interesting about that quote from the Gra is that there is a whole literature about that comment of the Gra, whether the Gra really wrote that comment or not. There are manuscripts of the original printings of the Gra that don't have that comment in, and there's one manuscript that has it written in on the side by a pen, and there have been those who suggested that it was a fiery student of the Gra who wrote it in. But since then, scholarship has found manuscripts that does have it in, so that's a little bit of an open question. But the position here of the Gra, the position perhaps, and the position of Rav Nathanson, the Sho'ul U'Meshiv, is that the Rambam rejected Shadim. Now, does the Rambam actually reject Shadim in any locations? So again, the argument is really from what he leaves out and not from what he says. There are statements of the Rambam that one could build a case that he would reject Shadim, even though he doesn't specifically refer to Shadim. So for instance, the Rambam, it's one of the sources I gave in the sheet here, in Maseches Avodah Zarah, speaks about talisman and other types of trinkets and superstitious behavior or superstitious beliefs. And he writes here, and I'm not going to read it inside because of the time, but the Rambam writes that these are things that are fake, they don't really have meaning, and they're sleight of hand, and they're things that people believed in, these trinkets and other types of superstitious behavior, but it's not something that people who really understand and really know, they realize that these are things that don't really have abilities. The same thing comes up, we have to realize that the Rambam has a position about angels, which will perhaps affect his perspective here on Shadim. Basically, every time the Chumash has a story about angels, the Rambam writes that the story is allegorical, or the story is a vision. Like, for instance, and if you're not aware of this, this might be surprising, the Abarbanel takes the Rambam to task for this when the angels come to visit Avram, and the whole story takes place with Sarah running to get the food for the angels, and then the story about her having a child in stone. The Rambam writes that the entire story is a vision. It's a prophetic vision. It didn't actually happen. And the Abarbanel takes the Rambam to task for that. But the Rambam's son in his has an essay about how to interpret Midrashei Chazal. And I put it here on the source sheet. Rav Avram ben Arambam writes, there are those stories that are things that happened in a chalom, in a dream. And they write them in clear language, implying that they happened. Why? Because it should be obvious to the reader that these are not real stories, that these are allegories, that these are just trying to teach us a lesson. This is the writing, this is what the Rambam's son writes. In the Moron of Ruchim, the Rambam makes a reference to a pasuk that, and makes a reference to Shadim, and he says, Shadim are people who waste their lives and never really take advantage of their abilities, and they're wasted, so they're like spirits. So, we are able to build a case that the Rambam, he doesn't quote any of the Gemaras, his son tells us that, at least that his son's perspective is, that whenever there's a story in the Gemara that sounds fanciful, it is, and is trying to teach a lesson as opposed to teaching the truth of what actually happened. We have the Rambam's definition of Shadim, that he says it doesn't refer to spirits, but it refers to people who are wasting their time in life. And we are able to start to build an argument that the Rambam did not accept Shadim.
It does mean Moffat and Roland. I mean, you know, Gabriel comes and destroys things. Nobody's going to deny that.
So that's the point I was trying to make. That
I think there's a difference between Moffat and Kabbalah that are seeing with you and God saying, listen, I need you to destroy this. I need you to do whatever you need to do.
Good. So what I'd like to do, we have around 10 minutes. What I'd like to do with the remaining time is, I've shown you two perspectives. We've certainly seen people who accept Shadim. And one could argue that that is the position of Chazal. They write all the time about Shadim. We've seen the perspective of the Rambam, that one could make the case, and there are those big voices in history that have argued that Rambam does not accept Shadim. I would like to throw out a few ideas that will perhaps bring a little bit of a bridge between the perspectives. And you don't have to accept any of them. Maybe all of them together, they could also complement each other, but I'd like to throw out a couple of ideas and different suggestions that have been made over the generations in order to square the Rambam with Chazal, or square the Chazal with the Rambam, whichever direction you'd like to take. One perspective, and again, this is not a developed perspective, it's just a couple of ideas, but I think taken together, in general, I guess the disclaimer I would make is that these are hard sugyas. When you have something that seems to be so much a part of Chazal, and it's hard for certainly for our modern perspective, it takes a tremendous amount of humility to say, you know what, there might be things that I don't understand, and that's an important perspective. When you have a Rambam, and you have building the case that the Rambam didn't accept something, so what are we doing? When you have a big voice like the Rambam that seems to be going against what was a more traditional perspective, certainly before the Rambam. So, just a couple of ideas, and I'll allow it to your own minds to see how they work out with each other. The first is that there might be a difference between what a person believes exists and what should be part of the halachic discussion, and what should be on the forefront of our discussions. In many sugyas, there seem to be things that are, I'm talking about philosophic sugyas, in philosophic discussions, there's things that are important for the discussion, and then there's sometimes other things that are lying beneath the surface that are important, but not always necessary for the discussion, certainly in the public sphere, certainly when you're paskening halacha. I don't have time to develop some examples right now, but perhaps to give a little bit of perspective, if it's true that people were being drawn after Shadim, they were sacrificing to them, they believed in them, I wouldn't be surprised if the Rambam would be able to say, listen, I don't doubt that they might exist, but I'm not so sure we need to address them. And the example I would bring is from the Ramban. The Ramban writes on the Pasuk in Parsha Shoftim, Tamim Tiyem Hashem Elokecha. The Ramban writes, there are things called Shadim and evil forces. But the Torah tells us, Tamim Tiyem Hashem Elokecha. You should be honest and straightforward and be Yashar and be Tamim. And says the Ramban, There are many forces in the world that if you know how to connect to them, you can use them. But Hashem commanded us to be straight and to be tamim, and not to worry about them. This is an important source in the discussion of segulos. Sometimes people believe that people have beliefs that if you do this and you do that, this, if you dip your fingers, and I'm not, if anyone has these practices, I'm not making light of them. But if you put your finger into the wine and you put it on your eyes and you put it into your pants pockets, so this will bring you bracha and bring you hatzlacha. I always like to quote. So I like to quote always what the Chafetz Chaim wrote. And the Chafetz Chaim, someone asked him about a segula, and the Chafetz Chaim said, I don't know which segulas work and which ones don't. I can tell you the greatest school. Mi ha'isha Chafetz Chaim, o'ev yom liros tov, nitzor lishon chameira. You want to have a long life, you want to have prosperity, don't speak Lashon Hara about people. And he then writes that there are many mitzvos in the Torah that we can do. There are many averos. You know, a lot of times when people are seeking the occult, or they're seeking for greater spirituality, they're always looking to go beyond the Torah. And the Rambam writes in Mor Nevuchim, Kedoshim Tiyu, Elu Kedushas Mitzvos. The mitzvos were given to us in order to bring us Kedusha. And this is something very popular nowadays, especially in the younger culture, and especially in our own religious culture, always looking for deep spiritual experiences that will take us deeper and deeper. And we have to realize that the mitzvos, we say on a bracha, Asher Kedushanu b'mitzvosov, the purpose of the mitzvos are to bring us Kedusha. We don't need to be going to meditating on a mountaintop in order to get Kedusha. Kedusha comes through doing the mitzvos. And it could be that the Rambam is taking a perspective like the Ramban. I'm not weighing in. Maybe they're true. Maybe there are forces. If Chazal say there are, then maybe there are. But we don't need to go there in order to come close to Hashem. We don't need to have that as part of the halachic discussion. And that could be one perspective. I'll share with you, I never saw it in print, but I've heard it for many, many years from Rav Aaron Soloveitchik. Rav Aaron Soloveitchik said that Shadim are not spirits, but they are imperceptible forces in our world that we now know about. And one of the examples he brought was germs. He said, if you look at that Gemara in Brachos, what does it say? Around you, there are thousands of them. If you could see them, you would be horrified and be shooken up if you saw them surrounding you, and they can cause damage. Said Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, supposedly, that's germs. There are germs, and there are all different types of diseases. You know, if you Google how many germs there are on a doorknob of a public building, you'll wear gloves every time you go out of your house. So Rav Aaron Soloveitchik said that perhaps shadim doesn't mean, again, someone running around in a red outfit with a spear looking to spear people at night. Maybe it means that there are forces in the world that we don't see that can be damaging, and we need to be careful. Another perspective, Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky writes in Emes LeYaakov that there were Shadim, but there aren't anymore. Why not? He writes about how the world, during the times of the Beis HaMikdash, when there was Nevuah in the world, so everything Hashem created was Zeh L'umah Zeh. Everything always has a counterbalance in the world. So when there were tremendous spiritual powers in the world, during the times of the Beis HaMikdash, when there were miracles, when there was prophecy, so there needed to be a counterforce. So therefore, there were spirits, and there were evil kochos, and there were forces in the world. And says Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky that the reason why the Rambam doesn't address it anymore is because when the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed and Nevuah ceased, so the counterbalance of these evil forces also stopped in the world. And this is the famous line from the Munkacher Rebbe. The Munkacher Rebbe said that there were Shadim until the Rambam Paskin that they're no longer Shadim. And once the Rambam passed him, that there are no more Shadim, so there were no longer were there any Shadim. So whichever perspective we're going to take, and what I think is perhaps part of the take-home message here, is the words of the Shaul Umeshiv in his discussion of this. The Shaul Umeshiv, seeing the building evidence that the Rambam rejects, and I didn't bring all the cases. There's one about how to determine, the Gemara in Chagiga discusses how to determine if someone's insane. And it talks about them sleeping in cemeteries and different behavior. And the discussion starts speaking about Shadim. So the Rambam drops the whole discussion and gives a different definition of a Shota. So he built a very strong argument that the Rambam rejects Shadim. And as opposed to what would probably be many of our, maybe flippant sometimes, attitude of saying, oh, Shadim, Rambam says they don't exist. They don't exist. That's just... As opposed to that attitude, the Shaul Umeshiv writes that the Rambam perhaps didn't believe in them, but he doesn't write it explicitly because of his respect for the Masorah. And I think that this is a very nice sugya and discussion for highlighting that balance of trying, and that is our chiyuv of Talmud Torah, is to learn things in depth and to try to analyze as best as we can and to say, you know what, there's respect, but I need to try as vigorously as I can to analyze, but at the same time to be able to have that sensitivity for tradition and to realize that there were great voices, you know, as intellectual as we think we are. The Ibn Ezra, or not the Ibn Ezra in this situation, but Rashi was also a very intellectual man, and he wasn't a fool. So we have to give him the credit, and I think that this is a great sugya that highlights how we sometimes address situations and sugyas that are against, or sometimes don't speak to our modern perspectives, but something that we see was a major theme in the writings of Chazal. Thank you, everyone. Have a good night.